Welcome. Parshas Shmini can be divided roughly into three sections. The first section is about that great Yom HaShmini, the final day of the inaugural process by which Aaron and his sons became Kohanim. The korbanos that were brought on that day and certain events that took place on that day. That's the first part of the Parsha. The second part of the Parsha talks about which animals we are permitted to eat and which not. Very well-known psukim. And the third part of the Parsha talks about various matters of Tumah and Tahora. It talks about certain kinds of shrutzim, certain types of crawling, creepy-crawly kinds of creations that when they die, transmit Tumah. And it talks about other forms of Tumah, Tumas Hazav, Tumas Nida. And it goes into very great detail about these topics. Understandably, that third and final section of the Parsha is probably less well-known to the average person than the first two parts. But I'd like to focus on two psukim and two Rashi comments in that section of the Parsha. There is such a thing called Tumas Eichlin, that if a dead sheretz falls upon some edible item, so it transmits Tumah to the food. But there is an important condition that must first be met. Let's go to Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Zayin. V'chi yipol minivlasam. When the nevela, when the dead body of a sheretz will fall, al kol zera zeruah, upon any, will translate roughly upon any planted seed, asher yizareya, that will be planted. In other words, when it will fall on any vegetable product, any product that grows from the ground, tahor hu, the food stuff, this edible vegetable product remains tahor. Although a dead sheretz just fell on it, but it does not transmit its tumah to this food. We'll see why and how in a moment. Pasuk Lamed Ches. V'chi yutan mayim al zera. But when water will be placed upon the zera, upon that seed or upon that edible item, v'nafal minivlasam alav, and then it will fall, the nevela of a sheretz, the dead body of a sheretz, upon it, tamehu lachem, then the food item, the zera, will become tame for you. So the pasuk is telling us that if you have a seed, let's say some sort of an edible seed or some sort of edible bean, and a dead sheretz falls upon it, it's tahor. The tumah is not transferred because that bean is dry. If the bean is dry, it just remains tahor, even though there's a dead sheretz sitting right on top of it. But if water has been placed on that seed or on that bean, and then the sheretz fell upon it, so then the tumah from the dead sheretz is transmitted to that seed or that bean or that whatever it is, that vegetable, and the food item becomes tame. Let's see what Rashi says. We're going to skip the Rashi who talks about this interesting phrase, zera zerua. We're going to translate it just as a planted seed, a seed that is planted. But now we go to tahor hu. Pasuk Lamed Zayin says that the sheretz falls right on top of this vegetable or this seed, and yet it remains tahor. Rashi says, limedcha hakosuv, that the scripture is teaching you here, shalehukshar v'niskon likreis ochel, that a thing has not been prepared and established to be called a food, l'kabel tuma, in order to receive and to be susceptible to tuma, ad shiyavoyo alav mayim, until water will come upon it. So you have, let's say, a cucumber. Cucumber grows from the ground. It's a food. You have a sheretz, a dead sheretz. The dead sheretz somehow gets kicked onto the cucumber, it touches it, and yet it does not transmit tumah to the cucumber. As Rashi says, because the cucumber has not been properly prepared in order to be called an ochel. It's not called a food yet, even though to me and to you it looks like a food. I mean, all you got to do is eat it. It tastes good, nutritious in some way, but it's not called a food until some water has touched it. We'll see in a moment, water that falls on the cucumber while it's still growing from the ground doesn't count. Because if that would count, then there's no such thing as a cucumber that never touched water. But we mean if it never touched water from the time that it was removed from the ground, removed from its attachment to the ground, so then Rashi says it's not called a food, that it should be mekabel tumah, that it should be susceptible to tumah. Let's see the Rashi and Pasuk Lamed Ches. V'chi yutan maya malzera, when water will be given upon a seed, Rashi says, la'achar shenitlosh. This is talking after the seed or the vegetable has been plucked from its attachment to the ground. That's when water will do something to it. She'im tamar yesh hechsher b'mechuber, because if you'll say that there is hechsher, that there is a preparation to make something susceptible to tumah when it is still attached to the ground, ein lecha zera shalei huchshar, so then there would be no such thing as a seed or a vegetable that is not prepared to be mekabel tumah. Things only grow from the ground because there's some water. So then this whole halacha wouldn't make any sense at all. So the pasuk has to mean that after the item has been removed from its attachment to the ground, water touched it, that makes it susceptible to tumah, something tameh falls on top of it, and the food becomes tameh. Now, Rashi says, mayim al zera, if water will fall upon the seed, Rashi says, bein mayim, bein shar mashkin. This would be whether it's water or whether it's other liquids. It's not really any liquid in the world. The Chazal give us a list of the acceptable liquids, but it's not only water. Bein mayim, bein shar mashkin, whether it's water or other liquids. That's one statement Rashi makes. Bein heim ala zera, bein zera neifel the seichon. Whether they, meaning whether the water or the liquids are upon the seed, they fell upon the seed, or whether the seed fell into them. So Rashi is telling us it doesn't matter whether the water falls on the seed or the seed fell into a pool of water or other liquids. It's all the same. Even though the pasuk says mayim al zera, it sounds like the water is on top of the seed, but Rashi says that doesn't matter. And now Rashi continues, hakol nidrash b'teres koyanim. This is all darshans. This is all expounded and derived from psukim in the Teres Kehanim, in the Midrash Halacha of Sefer Vayikra. Let's continue. One more Rashi. V'nafal minivlasam alav. The pasuk says that after the seed has become mukhsha the kabel tumah, it has had contact with water, and it is therefore ready and susceptible to tumah, if tumah should come, then tumah fell upon it. So Rashi says, af mi shinigav min hamayim, even though the seed has really been dried from the water is no longer there. It had water on it yesterday, but then the sun got hot and it dried off. And the sheretz is only touching it now, today. So af mi shinigav min hamayim, even if the seed or the food has been dried from the water, but the tumah attaches to it. The Torah was only makbid, the Torah was only particular that this item should have a shem oichel. It should have a name of food upon it. And as Rashi said before, if water never touched it, it's not called by the name ochel. So, but once it becomes an oichel, it's an oichel forever. But when this hechsher kabbalas tumah, when this readiness to be susceptible for tumah goes down upon it one time, meaning if one time this item touched water, shuv enu ne'akar heimenu, so then that name of ochel, that status of being a food, is enu ne'akar heimenu, it is never uprooted from it. So if water touched it once, when it was already plucked out from the ground, even though it's 2 weeks later and it's completely dry, it's bone dry, and now the sheretz falls upon it, that does transmit its tumah to the zera. These are the Rashis. And there are two questions that I would like to raise. Question number one is that Rashi, in his first comment on Pasuk Lamed Ches, tells us two halachas which do not seem to be part of the Pasuk itself. They do not seem to be derived from a simple reading of the Pasuk. The Pasuk just says, if water will fall on the Zera. Rashi adds that it's not only water. Now that's a very useful halacha to know, that it's not only water. It could be other liquids as well. But that's not what the Pasuk is saying in simplicity. That's one halacha that Rashi adds to the Pasuk. And Rashi also says it doesn't matter whether the water falls onto the Zera or the Zera falls into the water. Now again, that's very important to know on a practical level, but it doesn't seem to be what the Pasuk is saying. The Pasuk, if anything, seems to indicate that it's only if the water falls on the Zera, not the other way around. If we look in the Toras Kohanim, which Rashi tells us to do, he tells us to look at the Toras Kohanim. If we look there, we will see that neither of these halachas seems to come from the Pshutei Shel Mikra. The fact that it's not only water, but also other liquids, so that is learned, that is derived in the Toras Kohanim from a Gzeira Shava, Mayim, Mayim. It says here, Mayim, and it says in a previous pasuk, just a few psukim before, it actually doesn't even say the word Mayim in the other pasuk, but in the other pasuk it's talking about, maybe it does say the word Mayim. I don't have the psukim in front of me at the moment. But it says, let's say, it says Mayim in the other pasuk, a few psukim before. It talks about also some matters of Tumah and Tahara. And just like over there, it's really referring to any liquid. Here also, it's referring to any liquid. Now, first of all, Gzeira Shava in general is probably not Pshutei Shel Mikra. It's Torah Shebaal Peh. It's Torah L'Moshe Misinai, that we should link these two words, but I wouldn't call it Pshutei Shel Mikra. Secondly, if you look carefully at those previous psukim, I'm not going to go into them so as not to burden everyone with too much information, but if you look at those psukim over there, it's not even so obvious over there that any liquid would be equivalent to water. Even that is a drasha. So it is not obvious, certainly from this pasuk, that it's Bein Mayim, Bein Shar Mashkin. Yet, Rashi puts that in over here. The second thing that Rashi tells us is that it doesn't matter whether the water falls onto the seed or the seed falls into the water. If you look in the Toras Kohanim somehow derives that from the words in the Pasuk that says, V'nafal minivlasam alav. The nevela of the sheretz will fall upon it. Now, that is not obvious that means that it doesn't matter whether the water falls on the seed or the seed falls on the water. It doesn't seem to be talking about the seed and the water at all. It's talking about the nevela. It's talking about the dead creature falling onto the seed. If one looks in the Toras Kohanim and one looks in the Mefarshim, one can look at the wonderful commentary that the Chafetz Chaim wrote on the Toras Kohanim, one will see what is the basis of the Toras Kohanim's conclusion. But I would not say that it's Pshutei Shel Mikra. So we have here where Rashi uncharacteristically sticks in two halachas which do not seem to have their derivation in the simple meaning of the pasuk that he is looking at. So that's one question. Why does Rashi do that? Normally, as we've said so many times, Rashi only talks about halachas that are implicit in the simple meaning of the pasuk that he is discussing. But something that's derived by a profound expounding of psukim and perhaps derived by looking at other psukim, those Rashi will leave out. Why does he put in these two halachas? The second question is that Rashi concludes his discussion of halacha here by saying, Hakol nidrash b'teres kaihanim. Now that's also uncharacteristic for Rashi to cite his sources. We've mentioned many times, Rashi does not usually cite his sources. There are footnotes and parentheses that printers and publishers have put in, and it's very useful that they've done that, and they tell us this Rashi comment comes from this Gemara, and this Rashi comment comes from that Midrash. But Rashi only rarely writes it out himself. So we have a question why Rashi would do that here. A simple way, and I think a good way, to answer these questions would be to invoke a principle that I've mentioned occasionally, not very often. And that is that sometimes when Rashi looks at a pasuk, he looks at the Pshutei Shel Mikra, and he sees that if you will read that pasuk literally, and I don't mean like foolishly literal way, but if you'll read it simply and take it literally, it will cause you to make a mistake in halacha, then Rashi considered it his job to clear up that mistake for you, to prevent you from making that mistake. So here, Rashi looked at the pasuk. It says, V'chi yutan mayim al zera. It says, when water will be placed upon the seed, upon that edible matter. Well, if you just read the words, it's saying that the water has to fall on the zera. If it happened the other way around, that the zera fell into the water, well, that's not included here. That would not allow tuma to be transmitted. So since Rashi looked at the Pshutei Shel Mikra, and he saw that it's going to lead us to a certain conclusion, but Rashi knew that that conclusion is not correct according to the halacha that Chazal, that our sages have taught us, so he prevents us from making that mistake. And he tells us that don't be misled by this pasuk. Really, it's been mayim, it's whether the water fell onto the seed or whether the seed fell into the water. Either way, tuma can be transmitted afterwards. And same regarding the other statement that Rashi made. I accidentally went out of order. That's my derech. Rashi says, Rashi saw the Pshuta Shel Mikra that says, V'chi yutan mayim, when water will fall onto a seed. Water. The pasuk only mentions water. So if you read that sensibly and simply and sensibly, you would come to the conclusion that only water can do this job of allowing tumah to be transferred from a sheretz to an edible item. But maybe other liquids wouldn't work. Rashi knew that's not the halacha. He knows from the Chazal that that is not the halacha. He doesn't want the Pshutei Shel Mikra to lead you to a mistake in halacha. So he tells you, Bein Mayim, Bein Sharmashkin. He clarified, he prevented you from making that mistake. He told us that really it doesn't matter whether it's water or certain other liquids. And because Rashi is sort of breaking his rule, and he is introducing here halachas that are not derived directly from the simple meaning of this pasuk. So therefore, he kind of excuses himself by saying, Hakol nidrash b'teres kahanim. True, these laws are not exactly explicit in the pasuk. Don't break your head trying to look for them in the simple meaning of the pasuk. You're not going to find them. But it's all been expounded in Teres Kahanim. Our Chachamim, with their profound look at the psukim and their abilities to derive halachas from the psukim and their traditions of deriving halacha from the psukim, they have told us these halachas. And the reason why Rashi will make such clarifications is because that's really part of Pshutei Shel Mikra. If reading the word simply is going to lead you to the wrong conclusion in halacha, well, that's not what the pasuk wanted you to think. The pasuk doesn't want you to think the opposite of what the real halacha is. Mikra and halacha are not, they're not unrelated. They're not exactly the same either, but they're not separated from each other. So if the pasuk says X, and that would lead you to a false conclusion in halacha to think why, well, then that means you're not understanding the pasuk correctly. So therefore, Rashi will clarify that mistake. He will prevent you from making that mistake. That, I think, is a very simple approach to answer these questions. I think there is a deeper way to look at these matters, which will also help us to answer our questions. And that is that we need to focus on this halacha, which is really explicit in the psukim, that a zera, something that grows from the ground, cannot become tameh, even if it touches tuma, unless water has touched it first. Now, Rashi gives us an explanation of this. I don't know if I would call this a tam hamitzvah. I don't know if he's giving us the reason, but he explains the mechanism to us. Let's read the Rashi one more time. Rashi says, Shalei huchshar v'niskan likreis eichel, that a seed or anything that grows in the ground is not huchshar, it has not become prepared v'niskan, it has not been established and rectified to be called a food. It's not called a food until the kabel tuma, that it should be able to contract tuma, ad shiyavayu olav mayim, until water will come upon it. So let's just say that one more time in English. Something that grows from the ground is still not, even though it's edible, but it's not called a food in laws of tuma, meaning it cannot contract the tuma of foods until it touches water. Okay. The Ramban explains this quite differently. Let's take a look at Ramban. Ramban, in his comments on Pasuk Lamed Zayin, begins by quoting Rashi. He quotes exactly what we just read from Rashi, and Ramban says, L'shoin Rabbeinu Shlomo, this is the text, these are the words from Rabbeinu Shlomo, meaning Rashi. And then Ramban goes into a whole discussion about different matters, but towards the end of his comment, he comes back, he circles back, and he says, V'tam ha-hechsher, the understanding of this hechsher. How do we understand this idea that when the food is still dry, tuma has no effect on it? The food gets wet, now tuma does have an effect on it. What's the tam? How do we understand this? Says Ramban, Bavor, it's because, ki lichluch ha-sheretz, the dirt of the sheretz, the whatever it is about the sheretz that is dirty and impure, whether we're talking about some physical substance or some spiritual quality, but it's lichluch, it's something unclean, that uncleanness of the sheretz, v'hamitamim, and other things that cause tuma, yidbak b'ma'achalim b'lechut, they will attach themselves to foods when there is moisture, when there is water present. V'loy kein b'yaveshim, but not so by foods that are dry. It's like, I mean, we can understand this. This seems logical. This seems to be something that we can see. That if you have a completely dry, I don't know, I'm using the example of the cucumber. You just pull the cucumber off the vine, it's dry, and you touch something to it, so nothing of that other thing really clings to the cucumber, even if it does attach to it, but you could shake it off very easily. But if the cucumber is wet, the moisture facilitates some transfer of molecules, of substance from the other thing to the cucumber. So the Ramban says the lichluch, the dirtiness, the uncleanness of a sheretz can cling to a food when there is lechus, when there is moisture. Okay, now, the problem is that we learned in Rashi, and really it's a halacha, it's in the Teres Kohanim, it's in the Gemara, that if a vegetable touched water and then was dried off, it could still be mekabel tuma. As long as moisture touched it once upon a time, so tuma can still affect it. Now, what the Ramban just said doesn't sound like that. The Ramban just said that when there's moisture, there's an easier, the transfer of tuma is facilitated. The tuma can be dovek, it can attach itself, it can cling to the vegetable, to the food. What about after it's dried off? What if the sheretz doesn't touch the vegetable until after it has become dry? So Ramban says, "Va'osisa ha'tera harchaki yaseira." The Torah made an extra distancing. It made like a gzeira. It made a decree. L'tamei ha'mukhshorim b'mayim v'nigvu. To cause tuma, to declare tuma, upon foods that have been mukhshar, upon foods that have gotten some water upon them, and then were dried off. In other words, Ramban is saying, really, if the cucumber got wet, but then it dried off, and then only later the sheretz touched it, really, the law should be, it's not tameh, because there's no water there to facilitate the transfer of tuma from the sheretz to the cucumber. But the Torah made like a gzera. The Torah made a decree that this too should transfer tuma. Shaloi litein devarena l'shiurin, in order as not to give our words l'shiurin, in order not to chop up the halacha too much. In this case, it is tummy. In that case, it's not tummy. It's wet now, so it's tummy, but then it dried off, then it's not. The Torah didn't want to make too many distinctions within this halacha. And therefore, because people would probably mix them up, so the Torah just said, if water touches the cucumber, it forever after is roi lekabel tuma. It is susceptible to tuma, even if later on it becomes dry. Now, this is very different from what we saw in Rashi. Rashi, I'd say as a sort of a general, let's talk about the Ramban for a moment. Ramban seems rather logical, almost scientific. A dry object, things don't cling to it very well. You put some water there, things can cling to it. So the tumah of a sheretz can attach itself and affect a vegetable if the vegetable is wet. What about when it's dried off? The truth is it really shouldn't work. The only thing is, that's what we call a gzeira, not midirabbanan, but a gzeira midiraisa. The Torah itself decreed that even in this case, the tumah should be transmitted so as not to make too many distinctions in the law, which would lead to confusion. That's quite a chiddush. That's not the most obvious way to explain it, but that's how the Ramban explains it. And in general, it's kind of a logical, scientific, almost scientific kind of explanation. If we look at Rashi, I would say it's more on the level of gzeres hakosuf. Rashi says that a something that grows from the ground and is edible is still not called a food until water touches it once. Why does water touching it make it into a food? Why isn't it a food even before water touches it? There are many different things that grow from the ground that you can eat without washing them off. You might want to wash it for hygiene, for cleanliness, but it's edible. You can't tell me that a tomato that you plucked right from the vine is not edible until you wash it. But this is the law. This is what the Pasuk is saying. Until water touches it, it's not called an ochel. If it's not called an ochel, it's something of little significance, and therefore tumah does not attach itself. It's very much on the level of gzeres hakosuf. So two very different approaches, and there are some important ramifications. There are some important besides the general look, when we go down into the specifics, there are some very important differences between these two approaches. According to Ramban, that he explains that tumah cannot attach itself to a food without the presence of moisture, without the presence of liquid, simply because it can't attach. Dry does not attach very well to dry. So according to that, it's really not necessary for Ramban to tell us that it doesn't matter whether it's water or certain other liquids. That's really obvious. That follows logically. And in fact, the Ramban does not mention that halacha. It is the halacha. I'm not claiming the Ramban disagreed with that. But it was not necessary for the Ramban to say it, because once he explained this halacha in his semi-scientific way, in his semi-logical way, it follows automatically that it really shouldn't matter whether it's water or some other liquid. Also, according to the Ramban's explanation, it's really not necessary to talk about whether the seed fell into the water or the water fell onto the seed. That also, it follows logically that that should make no difference, because as long as it's wet, tumah can attach itself to the vegetable. And in fact, Ramban does not mention that halacha either, because again, once he explained it in his somewhat logical fashion, it follows automatically that it really doesn't matter which came first, the water or the seed. However, it was very necessary for Ramban to explain why the Hechsher Kabbalah's Tumah works even after the liquid has dried off. That was a problem for the Ramban, as we saw. If you're saying that the function of the water or the liquid is to facilitate the attachment of the Tumah to the food, because otherwise one dry thing doesn't attach itself very well to another dry thing. So if it's a logical, understandable idea that you need water in order to facilitate this attachment, so then that creates a big problem. But what about after it already dried out? And we know that our Chazal tell us that this Kabbalah's Tumah works even after the food has been dried out. That was very necessary for Ramban to explain, and he explained it in a very, shall we say, a creative way. He came up with a very interesting idea that sometimes not only did the rabbis make gezeiras, but sometimes even the Torah made a gezeira. That's Ramban. If we look carefully at Rashi, it's easy to understand why the Hechsher Kabbalah's Tumah works even after the liquid dries, because how does Rashi explain this halacha? He says, a food is not a food until water touches it. Okay, water touched it. So water touched it today, or water touched it last week. That's what the pasuk is saying. True, we don't really understand that, but that's what it's saying. That's the gzeiras hakosav. An item is not a food until water touches it. After water touches it, it is a food. It has nothing to do with dry on dry, things don't attach, and when one thing is wet, that's not the point. The point is it's not called a food until water touched it. So it's easy enough to explain that this applies even after it is dried off. And in fact, when Rashi tells us that halacha, he doesn't go into it, he doesn't explain it. He just says Lo hikpida Torah el aliyos alav shem eichel. The Torah was only particular that the item should have upon it the name food. It should be in the category of food, and then once it's a food, it's always a food. However, I think it was necessary for Rashi to explain why water is not the only thing that can create this hechsher. Why water is lavdavka over here? It's not so obvious. I mean, maybe it is only water. We're talking here about a gzeiras hakosav that has no apparent logical basis. According to Ramban, we're talking about something that does have an apparent logical basis, that one thing clings better to another if there's some moisture. But according to Rashi, that's not the point. The point is, if an item becomes food when it touches water. That's what the pasuk says. Well, what about if it touches blood? What about if it touches dew or some of the other liquids that the Al-Chazal tell us about? I don't know. Maybe that doesn't work. So that could be why Rashi made it a point to tell us, Bein Mayim, Bein Shar Mashkin, even though that point is not learned directly from this pasuk, but you would have missed that point if you just read the pasuk. And it also becomes necessary for Rashi to explain which fell into which. Is it the water that fell onto the zera, or is it the zera that fell into the water? Ramban didn't have to explain that. If the point is that things stick better when there's water, what's the difference when the water got there? But according to Rashi, I don't know. I mean, this is just something that is beyond human understanding. Why an ochel is not called an ochel until water falls on it? Well, maybe the water has to fall on it. What if it falls into the water? Maybe that's different. So that could be why Rashi tells us, Bein heima lazera, bein zera nefel l'seichon. It doesn't matter whether the water falls onto the zera or the zera falls into the water. Either way is tamei, even though that law is not explicit in this pasuk. It's a drasha, but it's not the simple pshat in the drasha, in the pasuk. But Rashi had to tell us, based on how he defined this halacha, you would not have come to that conclusion necessarily. Rashi had to tell us that so that we should not make a mistake in halacha. And of course, he concludes by telling us, Hakol Nidrish B'Torah Kohanim. Again, that's like an apology. I'm sorry for bringing in things that don't come from this pasuk, but it was necessary. This, I think, is a more sophisticated look at why Rashi had to mention these two halachas and why he felt it necessary or appropriate to cite his source. We have just explained that there is a fundamental disagreement between Rashi and Ramban about this halacha of Hechsher Kabbalas Tuma. According to Rashi, when water touches a zera, the zera now becomes an ochel, it comes into the category of food, and then tuma can have an effect on it. Why? I don't know why. That's what the pasuk is saying. According to Ramban, a dry food cannot have tuma transferred to it because the tuma won't attach to it. But once it becomes wet, when it gets moist, so then the tuma more easily attaches to it, and then it can contract tuma from the tummy item. Basic, fundamental machlokes. There is, however, a famous sefer that I don't quote very often. It is called the Kli Chemda. It was written by Rav Meir Don Plotsky, who lived from 1866 to 1928. He was one of the great Rabbonim and Gedolim in Poland pre-Holocaust. And he wrote this fabulous sefer called Kli Chemda on the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. It is full of pilpulim and lumdus and deep halachic thought. The pieces are not short at all. In particular, he likes to focus on Ramban. And here, in fact, in his comments on Parsha Shmini, he does focus on Ramban. And the Sefer Kli Chemda comes to the conclusion that Ramban does not really disagree with Rashi. And he has two main proofs. There are others, but I'm going to talk about two main supports to his argument. First of all, we saw in the Ramban that the Ramban begins his comments by quoting Rashi. He quotes Rabbeinu Shlomo, that Lehukshav Iniskan Likres Eichel the Kabbal Tuma Ad Shiyovo Olav Mayim. The Ramban says this is what Rabbeinu Shlomo Rashi says. The Ramban never says in this whole piece, he never says, and I disagree. Now, anybody who's learned a little Ramban knows that Ramban was not shy about disagreeing with Rashi. Many, many times he quotes Rashi, and he says, Eino nochon, it's not right, can't be. And he goes on and he gives a totally different approach. He's not shy about it. Although in his introduction he expresses the greatest respect for Rashi, but he's not shy about disagreeing. Here, he quotes Rashi, and he never says, I disagree. In the middle of a long comment, he says something that looks different from Rashi, but the Sefer Kli Chemda contends that since he didn't say, I disagree, so then we shouldn't assume that he disagreed. Secondly, there is a basic problem with the Ramban's approach. Again, the Ramban's approach is that Tuma cannot cling to a totally dry object. Okay, the problem is that the halacha, which it says in Torah Kehanim, in the Gemara, is that when we talk about water falling onto a zera, onto a food, the halacha says that the water must come in contact with the food biratzain, willingly. The person who owns the food has to be willing for that water to come onto the food. either he put the water there, he literally poured the water onto the food, or even if he didn't literally pour it on, but in some way we can see from his actions that he wants it to be there, or at least he's willing to have it there. This is based on the pasuk Ki Yutan Mayim Al Zera. The simple translation of Ki Yutan Mayim is when water will be placed upon the Zera. But Chazal Darshan, that the word Ki Yutan is written, if you take away the vowels, it's just written Yud, Tav, Nun, which could be read Yitain. Yutan means it will be given, it will be placed. But if you take away the nekudais, like in the Sefer Torah, there are no nekudais, you could read it, v'chi yitain, when the person will put the water on the zera. So from that, Chazal Darshan, that the water only affects, it only creates this situation, that the food is now ready to be mekabel tuma, if there was agreement on the part of the owner. Only if it's as if he was yitain, as if he himself put it there. He doesn't have to literally put it there himself, but there has to be at least his will, at least his agreement that it should be there. Now, according to Ramban, why should that be? According to the way the Ramban explains this whole halacha, that the dry food will not absorb the tuma, unless there's some water there. But what's the difference how the water got there, whether it was put there on purpose or totally by accident or with the approval of the owner of the food or without the approval? Why should that make any difference? And therefore, the Sefer Kli Chemda concludes that really, Ramban is not disagreeing with Rashi. Really, Ramban is just adding a detail to Rashi's explanation. Really, Rashi is right. What the water does to the food is that it makes it into a food. A cucumber that you just pulled off the vine is not yet a food. It's not yet in the Torah's category of ochel until it touches water. When it touches water, it becomes an ochel. Why does Ramban talk about moisture facilitating the transfer of tuma from one item to another? That's because he had a question. His question was that if the rotzoin, if the machshava of the owner is necessary for this hechsher kabbalas tuma to take place, if the water will only cause this halacha to become active, if the water was placed there at least with the agreement of the owner, well, then why can't just machshava alone create an ochel? Why is it that we say that the cucumber is not an ochel until water falls upon it with the agreement of the owner? Why can't you just say, as long as the owner wants it for food, it becomes an ochel? Okay, maybe when you first plucked the cucumber off the vine, maybe you didn't intend to eat it. Maybe you're going to throw it away. Maybe you're going to burn it for firewood. I don't know what else you could do with a cucumber exactly. Maybe you're going to throw it at a bird. I don't know. But once you have machshava that you're going to eat it, so the Ramban's question is, why isn't that enough? On that, the Ramban answers that the water is not totally, the function of the water is not something that is totally beyond our understanding. The function of the water is to facilitate the transfer of the tuma to the cucumber, because dry things don't cling very well to something that's totally dry. But the Ramban's only saying this as an addition to Rashi's basic approach. It comes out, if we will accept this approach of the Kli Chemda, that there are two elements in this halacha of Hekshar the Kabbal Tuma. One element is the machshava. One element is the will and the thought of the balim, of the owners here, that they want this water to touch the cucumber. But second, there is the lachus, there is the moisture itself of the water. The two things work together. And the two approaches of Rashi and Ramban, they actually go hand in hand. They're just complementing each other. compliment with an E in the middle. They're working together. The Ramban is really just adding a detail to what Rashi says. And I think it also comes out an interesting phenomenon, an interesting point here. We have Rashi's approach, which seems to be very much on the level of Gzeres HaKosuv. We have Ramban's approach, which seems more logical. What the Sefer Kli Chemda is telling us is, the real truth is it's a mixture. And this is very often, I think, in my humble opinion, very often this, I think, is the proper way to look at mitzvahs. They're not totally Gzeres HaKosuv, generally speaking. Maybe there's an exception somewhere, but they're not totally beyond human comprehension. That's wrong to say that. On the other hand, I think it's wrong to say they're totally logical. There's always some element there that's really a little bit beyond what we would have thought. It's always a mizug. It's always a mixture. There is a certain logic that we can grasp, but there's also a certain divine logic, a certain divine element, a certain Gzeres HaKosuv element that we cannot grasp. I think that if this will be put to the test, if people will experiment with that approach, they will find many, many, many very good, solid understandings of many different mitzvahs.